When Israel wanted to call a king, Samuel tried to talk him out of it. He said, "You don't want a king." They said, "Yeah, we do." He said, "No, you don't." He said, "Yeah, we do." Finally, he gave in to him and he anointed a king. His name was Saul. And after a while, it didn't work out. And Samuel got right depressed about that. And then, as we see in chapter 16 here of 1 Samuel, finally the Lord said, "Okay, Samuel, how long are you going to mope around and be sad that it didn't work out, huh? I'm done with Saul, okay? It's over. Now we've got some work to do." And he sends him to Jesse in Bethlehem. He says, "Among his sons, I'm going to pick a new king. Samuel, get going." So Samuel goes. I don't know how the Lord spoke to Samuel, but it sure does seem to be a real clear, direct conversation that he readily understands. I'm glad Samuel can do that. I wish the Lord would speak to me that clearly. And I know you wish he would too. Samuel's faithful and he goes to Bethlehem, to Jesse's house. When he gets there, he just about scares the town leaders to death because Samuel is such a powerful fellow. And maybe he's bringing a curse or judgment or he's going to yell at him for something. And so they are very much afraid. Have you come in peace? He says, yeah, y'all relax here. I'm here for a sacrifice for peace. So just let's have a party. And let's have Jesse's household come here. And actually what they're having here is a little talent search. Okay, what is this, American Idol or something? Next, you know, and then or a star search or something like that. That's about what Samuel's doing. One son after the other parading before the man. And not him. Have you got any more sons? You've kind of run out of sons here. Verse 7 is the key verse of what we're looking at here today, okay? It's God's criteria for judging who his man or woman or person might be. And God makes very clearly it's not appearance. It's not height. It is not anything that you can see from the outside. But verse 7 says God looks at the heart. That's what he was looking for. God looks at the heart. And maybe you and I should do the same thing too. What can we look at? What can we be impressed with? The very same things that Samuel was impressed with. When Eliab came in front of him, he thought, "Oh man, look at this guy. He is so good looking, probably king material here. And he's so tall. Oh man, that's somebody we can literally look up to." Height has its advantages, doesn't it? You know, a tall man is more readily thought of as a leader than a short person is. That's not to say short people can't be leaders. Napoleon was very, very short. My goodness, he was a tremendously powerful leader, not necessarily for good, but he was a leader. We tend to think more highly of tall people in a natural sort of thing. I'm kind of tall, and I've never regretted being tall because it has its advantages. And Eliab was handsome. Handsome. You know how it is about presidential candidates these days. We kind of expect them to be at least halfway good looking, to be telegenic. If they don't show up good on TV and on the press and in the news, well, then we're not too inclined to vote for them. Not a lot has changed in 3,000 years. They were impressed with good looks back then too. Looks make a difference to people, but not to God. Not to God at all. Excuse me. Now, I'll be honest with you. I think women in our society get the worst of it when it comes to the expectations of looks, that looks matter. There are probably 3 billion women on this planet that don't look like the models do, you know, these size 2 models. Probably only 8 women in the world look like that. And yet, for some reason, every woman's supposed to match that concept of what a woman's supposed to look like. You know, Marilyn Monroe was a size 12, okay? Marilyn Monroe was The average American woman weighs 144 pounds and wears between a size 12 and a size 14. It's estimated that one out of every four college-age women have some kind of eating disorder. Why? Trying to match some kind of image that's out there? And you've got to remember that the models that are in the magazines are all airbrushed. Their pictures have been adjusted and changed so that they look better than they actually do in person. I read a psychological study about a psychological study that was done in 1995 that found that for women, 3 minutes of looking at models in a fashion magazine made 70% of those women feel depressed or guilty or kind of ashamed of themselves. Just 3 minutes of looking at those beautiful models. I don't understand that, because 3 minutes of my looking at those beautiful models always made me feel better, you know? I'm just kidding. Do appearances matter all that much? Friedrich Buchner wrote this about his mother. And he's a well-known Christian writer. I've read a lot of his works. He's really good. But he said this about his mother: being beautiful was her business, her art, her delight. And it took her a long way and earned her many dividends. But when, as she saw it, she lost her beauty, she was like a millionaire who runs out of money. She took her name out of the phone book and got an unlisted number. With her looks gone, she felt she had nothing left to offer the world. So what she did was simply check out of the world, the way Greta Garbo and Marlene Dietrich checked out, holing themselves up somewhere and never venturing forth except in disguise. My mother holed herself up in her apartment, then in just one room of her apartment, then in just one chair in the room, and finally in the bed, where one morning, perhaps in her sleep, she died at last. Isn't that a shame? How sad. You know, I know a lot of women who they aren't much to look at. They're not ugly. Not ugly, but they've got some age on them, okay, and some wrinkles, and actually they're getting kind of feeble and getting kind of homely, if the truth be known. But they are the most dearly loved and cherished and valued people in the world. And you know what their names are? Their names are Granny and Nana or Grandma or Meemaw or Gaga or all those kind of names for these people who just, what's so great about them? Their looks on the outside? No. It's that good heart on the inside that their grandchildren know that they just love them so very much and are ready to spoil them to death and just cherish them and are always glad to see them. Grandchildren are great at looking inside of grandma's heart. You know, it's not important how we look. That's what the Bible says today. You know, it's also, we'd add, not important as to how much we know or how smart we are. Now, education's good. Having smarts is good. God can use that. But he doesn't need a high IQ, and he doesn't need 17 college degrees for you to be important and useful to God, to have greatness. Daniel Goleman noted in his book, Emotional Intelligence, that IQ offers very little explanation about the destinies of people. They did a study, 95 Harvard students from classes in the 1940s were followed through middle age. And then they compared their level of success compared to a lot of other people who didn't have all that Harvard education. And they found out there wasn't any relationship between a higher salary or productivity or status in their field. Nor was there any greater life satisfaction or the most happiness in their friendships or family or romantic relationships. That kind of high-powered education just didn't seem to matter. A similar study was done with some boys, 450 boys who were the sons of immigrants. 2/3 of them were from families who were on welfare. And this was in Somerville, Massachusetts, in a very blighted area of that city. 1/3 of these guys had IQs below 90, okay? But again, there was very little relationship between intelligence and what they had done, what they had accomplished in their lives, what greatness they achieved. In short, intelligence is nice to have, looks are nice to have, but it depends on how you use what you have. More important than intelligence in your brain is the intelligence in your heart and how much it leads you to love. You know, maybe it was that personal appearance featured very highly in our choosing our spouse, our wife, or our husband. But most people, if you ask them today what it is that's so great about the person they're married to, they're probably going to say something like, I love the way he treats me. Or I know that she'll always be there for me. Or I know I can trust him. Or she's my best friend. That's what people will talk about. Not what's on the face, but what's in the heart. There are many women who would trade a handsome husband for one who's faithful, or one who's sober, or one who's a good father to their children, or one who will sit with her in church, or one who will treat her with respect. Those are the important things. You know, this has been around for a little while, but it might bear worth repeating. You ever heard that little poem called The Dash? You know, might be real familiar to you. Maybe this is the first time you've heard it. But it says this, I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of his friend. He referred to the dates on her tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of her birth and spoke of the second with tears. But he said that what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that she spent alive on earth. And not only those who loved her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left. You could be at dash mid-range. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and what's real, and always try to understand the way other people feel, and be less quick to anger and show appreciation more, and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read with your life's action to rehash, would you be pleased with the things they have to say about how you spent your dash? That's a good insight into human life. Remember, if you would please, Jesus doesn't tell us, hey, get your act together, and then I'll lead you to greatness. He doesn't say, hey, get it together on the outside, and then we can really move here. What does Jesus say to us? He says, hey, just give me your heart, okay? You give your heart to me, and then we'll take it from there.